Press play, curtain of an hour in. It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got an on
the option? No,
oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life in New York City.
I'm Connor McDowell.
And I'm Dylan McDowell. And we are back for yet another episode of sizzling and steaming drama here. And it's been a really great week. You know, I feel like every week there's some different content that sort of comes out that like everyone obsesses over for a couple of days. And this has been the moment that I've been waiting for. Connor, I think you know what I'm going to talk about, but
wait, why is my heart racing?
Well, because we are Taylor Swift super fans.
That is right.
Lover came out on Sunday, and we just watched it last night. And I have been listening to her, that they released the tracks on Spotify.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because there's one that I was obsessed with. Well, I mean, I was obsessed with all of it, but her Cornelia Street got me.
Mm-hmm.
She's a legend. She's an icon. She is the moment.
Yes.
And I also am gagged for the name of the concert, the City of Lover.
I know.
Come on, it's perfect. In Paris. It was in Paris, right?
I believe.
Am I making this up?
It was. My favorite part about it was that like it really heavily featured just her and a guitar. Like the whole middle section was like acoustic versions of, I mean, Death by a Thousand Cuts is my favorite song on the album, but actually, ooh, no, it's Daylight. I can't choose. My favorite part about any concert that we see these days is that it's, as you call it, Connor, semi-live.
Right. It is semi-live. I mean, she, like, you can tell it's not the studio recorded tracks that she laid down for the actual album. I kept calling it, like, mutated auto-tune. It's not to say she sounded great.
Amazing.
But it's like, you know, it's like retouched, like, by an angel.
A little angel.
You know? Yeah. No, but I loved it. And you know what I was thinking about, too, is all of the songs are already amazing as they're presented on the album, but then she does them just a little bit different, and you're like, wow, they still hold up just on guitar, they still hold up just on piano, and also, like you pointed out, especially during You Need to Calm Down, she looked like she was having fun.
She was dancing, and it wasn't awkward. My favorite part was during Daylight, during the bridge section, how she sort of like took it all down just into her normal, natural, breathy octave,
breathy.
And you got all of the lyrics, like the "and I can still see it all."
Oh my God, back and forth from New York.
Like you really could feel those lyrics. And I think that that is like the thesis statement of the album, that whole song.
Oh, right. Well, then of course at the end, she has her iconic little, I guess it is her thesis statement about being defined by the things you love. And we always talk about how like, wait, why is it this like muffled, like I recorded this like in my closet, like on a, which is like what all of us are doing now, honestly, in quarantine, recording things in our closets. But then my point is, if it wasn't done with some sort of noise, like if it wasn't changed a little bit and she was just talking straight on, it would sound so goofy.
It would sound a little awkward. It would sound like a monologue. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's brilliant.
Her songwriting is absolutely amazing. She captures the feeling. And you know, our guest today also has that way about her.
I'm gagged.
She can find a time and a place, and she just puts it in a song, and we're there.
And also, this might be one of the longest intros that Dylan has ever written, so I'm going to have to take some deep breaths here.
Yeah, we'll be here for you, though.
Okay, all right.
Bring her in, Connor.
Here we go. Our guest today is an entertainment business legacy, most recently being recognized as a 2020 Outer Critics Circle honoree for Outstanding Featured Actress in a Musical for her role in Jagged Little Pill, known to audiences for her incredible performances on both stage and screen. She's captured the hearts of her devoted fans through her down-to-earth personality and iconic voice. She made her Broadway debut in the acclaimed 2015 Broadway revival of Def West's Spring Awakening as the voice of Marta. She then became an instant icon on You on Lifetime, which, oh my God, I actually kind of forgot about that for a second, which we have to talk about, as well as having appeared on The Flash and Indoor Boys. Her original music has been featured in film and TV such as Younger, Covert Affairs, oh, yeah, Dylan, you watched, and Thanks for Sharing. She's a breakout star of the Alanis Morissette musical Jagged Little Pill, as Bella Fox, singing an original song that was written for the musical. She recently, like yesterday, released her third EP, Demos Volume 1, all recorded in one-take sessions while quarantined at home. She is the moment. Please welcome to drama, Catherine Gallagher.
That was like the kindest words anyone's had to say about me. I'm so flattered. Thank you so much.
It's all true. Catherine, thank you for doing this.
It is my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You look gorgeous straight from the garden, as you were saying.
I know when we hopped on to everybody listening, we hopped on and I was like, I'm sorry, I'm taking a bit of dirt on my face. I'm just from the garden.
I feel like you could make that like part of your look though. Like, and people would then like do it.
Well, it's so funny. I've never gardened before in my life, but I'm a very obsessive person with activities. But it doesn't last long, so I have to really take advantage of the moment. And so I've since, in the past 2 months, planted 7 different gardens, and my mom named them today. So we have the panic garden, which is the first one I did. I planted all these vegetables just in case they ran out of the store, like the first day of quarantine. I planted.
So this is like the 7 stages of quarantine. Each one gets a garden.
Honestly, not no. I'm like, he's so great. Yeah, the panic garden, grandma's garden, the outhouse garden, which is I dug up an old outhouse and repurposed the soil, which has truly been weird times. And then there's the patio garden, and then there's the herb garden, and then I'm forgetting one. Oh, the tulip garden, and then there's the fairy garden.
Oh my God, I love all of, I'm going to go to the fairy garden.
Me too.
It's so magical. I built it right by the brook, and I have like stones around it, and it's all like medicinal herbs. If they grow, they might not. I've never done this before.
Well, this is amazing. We joked beforehand that this like so Tuck Everlasting vibes. Like, you're winning.
I'm trying. I need to stay busy. Otherwise, I've never not been busy.
Yeah. Well, you were very busy, you know, recording another EP.
Yes.
But wait, you were trying to like, I could see you holding back talking about.
Hold on. It was so good.
So did you watch City of Lover?
Stephanie Siles and I were texting throughout the entire thing.
I love that. What was the highlight of the concert for you?
For me, The Archer is a very special song to me. It came out on my birthday, which, as you've heard, my EP was not the happiest day of my life. I love your nods right now. It's just
like I was doing laundry while listening to it, and all of a sudden I said, "Wait, what was that? This is a birthday party. Like, this is not what I thought was happening."
Yeah, painful time for me. So that song came out on my birthday, and I was driving home with my two best friends from what was supposed to be a very fun trip with the two of us, or the three of us. And I'm driving home, and I was like, oh my God, Taylor released a song. Because everyone was texting me, like, Taylor released a song on your birthday. I was like, oh my God, Taylor released a song on my birthday. So I'd play it. And all of a sudden, these tears are streaming down my face. And I'm like, play it again, play it again. They're just like, do you want me to drive? I'm like, I'm fine. So that song is always very special.
Which, this was last summer? Because I think I remember it coming out last summer. Okay, wow. Yeah.
You're a Leo.
I'm a Leo. I'm the very first day of Leo.
Wow. Oh, okay. the Archer is one of those songs you can play on a loop, though. I think it's one of her most inventive tracks she's ever done.
It's genius. Those lyrics... All of my enemies started out friends. I mean, I'm sorry. But I was in Cornelia Street acoustic, like really epic for me. Mm-hmm. And then Daylight, I wept.
Yes. Steph
and I were texting because she sent me flowers once. And she said, goodbye, cool summer. Hello, Daylight.
And chill. So,
because she's like the best friend ever. And she also sent me that with like the big cookie pie from Milk Bar. And like, yeah, she's just like, we can make a podcast dedicated to how much I love Stephanie Siles.
And my God.
I never run out of things to say.
I love Stephanie, but I also love that cookie pie thing from Milk Bar. That might be the biggest thing I miss about New York. And that, anyways.
You know, the main pastry chef from Milk Bar, though, she does online baking classes every day on Instagram.
Oh, that's so cute.
I know.
I might have to tune in.
We're going to have like a FaceTime date where we make the things.
See, like, I love these fun ways that we're finding to like stay connected and try new things. And
right?
Wait, I have one thing to say about The Archer that I noticed during the concert was that there's like a thumping bass the whole time. And I feel like it's like a heartbeat throughout the entire song.
It's just,
wow.
It's so beautiful. That's such a beautiful observation.
We were texting our best friend Lisa about it. Who's like a huge,
love Lisa.
She's like, we love. Actually, I think she watched all of you and she will actually be gagged that we're talking talking to.
She loves Lisa. You.
That's so funny.
And does she love me or does she love the show? I mean, honestly, a question. That's the one terrible thing about that title. People are always like, oh my God, I love you. And I'm like, I love you too. And they're like, the show. And I'm like, yeah, same.
And the thing about you is like, I mean, Connor was a appointment viewer who watched every week on Lifetime.
Catherine, you have to know. I was excited for it because Pretty Little Liars is like one of my favorite shows. So I was like, all right, Shay Mitchell.
Wonderful person with an insane work ethic. She is incredible. I just could not love her more. I have to say that.
I am
gagged. She is like the most lovely person.
I love her.
And she just had the cutest baby. Like, I think she's wonderful.
Oh my God. I love that. And she's iconic. She knows she really turned out a great performance. Memorable. And most of your scenes were with her, right?
Yes, all my scenes were with Elizabeth Lael, who's my best friend. Now, I mean, I didn't know her before. Nicole Kang and Shay Mitchell.
Oh my God. That's it was great. You know, the thing about you, the first season I watched it week to week on Lifetime. Oh, cause I was saying like, love Shay Mitchell. I love Gossip Girl. So I was like, all right, Penn's on this. And he's also so wonderful.
He's so talented. He's hilarious. My favorite and first interaction with Penn was we were filming the pilot. And I was walking by his trailer. Trailer door was open. And he was like, Catherine. And I was like, yeah. And he like calls me in, brings me in. And we had like an hour long discussion about like the Baha'i faith and faith in general and different perceptions of God throughout the world. Like it was such a, and I was like, you are a deep, cool, incredible, insightful person. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
My dog won't stop barking.
He's great.
For 7 hours because the mailman was here.
Oh, you're good.
Very good guard dog.
But you know, I did watch the first season on cable. I know, cable queen, humble brag. And I watched it week to week. And then, and I thought it was great. I was like, oh, it's a really good show. I thought it was like directed really well. And then, but I was like, okay, I don't know if I'll watch season two or not. I'll be just, like, be fully honest. I was like, I felt like the story was told.
100%.
And then it dropped on Netflix and everybody was obsessed. And they were like, oh my God, this is the best binge I've ever had. And I was like, okay, maybe I would have been obsessed, like fully obsessed if I binged it. Cause I found Joe to be a bit tiresome at times. So when I watched season two, I did binge it. And I was like, you know what? I think this is the perfect show to binge. It's amazing. And I thought season two was also great as well.
It's so funny. We kept saying that when we were filming it, we were like, I just feel like this is going to be the show you're going to want to watch all at once. Like we kept kind of saying that. And so we were all really excited. We had always known that the show was a co-pro with Netflix. So internationally, it was always going to be Netflix. So we were hoping, you know, that like we would have an international fan base and then later it would go to Netflix was sort of like our thought. And then after we like were fully a flop on Lifetime, like terrible ratings. I think Lifetime was like, you can have it, we don't want it. And then it was on Netflix and they like rebranded it. We got new like social tags and everything. And then all of a sudden everybody, you know, this is including my friends, were texting me like, I didn't know you were on a Lifetime or a Netflix show. And I was like, guys, I've been posting about this same exact show every Sunday, begging you to watch. Oh. But it's honestly magical. It's like the power of Netflix and the power of like having that immediacy, and that it's just like such a lesson, and like whatever the content is needs to have the right home and the right packaging, you know, in order
I agree.
To really find its full potential.
Yeah.
It's nothing like, else changed.
They didn't change a thing about it, did they?
Not even a word.
I remember thinking it was even a little racy for Lifetime.
Yeah, there were two. There was a version that aired during the day and a version that aired during the night.
Oh.
That's so Lifetime. Right? Do they have other scripted series? Like, we all know they have all the Christmas movies and everything.
Well, have you seen Unreal?
Oh yes. Watched a couple seasons of that. Yes.
That was when I first got the appointment. My reps were like, Lifetime is doing some of the best television. You have to watch Unreal. And I watched it in one. So I was like, this is the greatest show I've ever. It's honestly like, I think one of the best shows I've ever
seen. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh my God. Well, anyway, loved you on you. And this is like a mild spoiler if you haven't seen season two. Dylan, cover your ears. But I like half expected you to pop up at the end of season two because they brought Stamos back in.
I know. I was hopeful. I mean, who knows what'll happen in the future. I think definitely, you know, there were a couple conversations, you know, here and there about maybe she would come back. And who knows? Maybe season three she'll come back. We never know.
But honestly, I'm sure there'll be a season three.
She's hanging out. She's and I, you know. But as of right now, there's no plans for me to come back. So I would love to return.
So was Jagged happening already when they were doing season two?
When we were doing season two, no. It was on that year hiatus where I couldn't really take any work because we were planned to return, and it kept getting pushed and pushed to find a theater. So our whole cast was just like, well, guess we won't work for a year. So that was why I got to do The Flash, was because they were like, you know, they knew that I couldn't sort of go in for any of their other shows. And they were like, well, we have this one episode. And I was like, I can do one episode.
I remember seeing you on there because I watched The Flash up until recently when I just had to cut things because I watch way too many things. And I remember seeing you and be like, oh my God, like there's like the Berlanti verse is like oddly like associated with Broadway.
Well, because Greg is a huge fan of theater, and he's a real champion of our entire community. He came to see Jagged and was really excited by it. And he grew up sort of doing theater and loved it. And so he's definitely a big champion, and he's always got his eye on like what's happening. And you know, I mean, I think even he was a producer on Be More Chill, but I'm not entirely sure about
that. Wow.
I'm pretty sure. And he produced this like incredible, like, illusion magic show that I went to. Like, he's just really so innovative and such a champion of all things theatrical and sort of pushing the boundaries and all queer stories. I adore him and Sarah Schechter, who he works with as one of his right-hand ladies. And they're just, both of them are true champions of our entire community. So
You know what?
Crossover happens.
He definitely is a theater guy, because when we were seeing falsettos in 2016?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was outside the theater and I just walked up to him and I was like, I just need to tell you, I love literally all of your shows. And he was shook, I think, because I don't know that he gets recognized often.
He's
a young, very handsome man. Like, he's like so indiscreet. He's probably wearing like a baseball cap or something.
I think he was.
Yeah, and he's like the last person also to make himself known or to be, you know what I mean? Like, he's just so humble and so just hardworking and down to earth, and I just adore him. But yeah, so to answer your question, which I fully ignored.
No, you're fine.
I was like a crazy person, and I had actually booked you. So I was in the middle of filming season one when I got the audition, or I think I just started filming season one when I got the audition for Jagged. And at this point, Bella was like, an ensemble role. Ensemble role, one scene. Had no promise of going to ART, no promise of going to Broadway, like nothing. And I was like, but it's Alanis. And so I still went in, and then when I got the job, I was like, okay. So we went to the producers of Jagged, and we were kind of like, hey, you know, I'm filming a TV show right now. Would it be okay if I missed a day or two? Because I only filmed like one day per episode. And they were like, no. And I was like, oh, okay. I went to Greg and Sarah Gamble, and I was like, hey, I gotta do this. And they wrote me out of two episodes, and that's why Annika goes to grief counseling camp. And then they still brought me back for more. So they were like so kind and generous. I've poured my thanks to them like so many times, because that is a very generous thing for producers to do. And it gave me just this opportunity of a lifetime in the midst of another opportunity of a lifetime. And so I really got so lucky. I'm like the only person in the world that would be like, excuse me, I'm gonna turn down two episodes of this potential television show and take it for an ensemble role in a lab with no future employment promised, for no money, for like, just like, I look back on it now and I'm like, you have balls.
Now, was this the famed lab that featured Idina Menzel?
No, that was before my character even existed.
Okay.
So there was a different plot. There was Idina, and that was like a 29-hour reading.
Okay.
So Bella was not, it was about like Nick and a frat party. It was very different. I've heard rumors.
Wow. Well, we saw Jagged, gosh, was it back in January maybe? And
yeah,
it was just, I mean, when I saw it, like my boyfriend and I, like we were just, after every song would end, we would just be like, wow, like, holy shit. Like, how are they doing? The choreography is some of my favorite I've ever seen. And just, it's the way you do a jukebox musical. Like,
thank you.
It is just, and you were phenomenal, of course. Iconic in every way. And just like, I mean, the whole cast is brilliant. But like we mentioned in the intro, like, you were absolutely one of the breakout stars. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if people really related to Bella, especially because of like, the Me Too movement and everything. No spoilers really for anybody who hasn't seen the show, but who knows when they'll see it at this point. Like, it's just such a powerful story. Do you feel like there was like a big responsibility in carrying that?
Massive. 100%. Yeah, you know, Bella's a very interesting role because it was never really supposed to be a big role or a central role. And the thing that really changed that was the response that we got from the audience. You know, when we did it at ART, it was still an ensemble role. I was still, you know, changing my clothes after Predator to like headbang in the back of You Ought to Know. Like, it was like an emotional roller coaster that I don't really honestly know how I survived, but I did, which is cool.
You're like crying in the background of You Ought to Know.
Literally, like, well, yeah, though, like, not even a joke. There was one night where it was just like, I had finished Predator. I went in to do You Ought to Know. And by the end of it, I was like, everyone get like, there's such a release of anger. But it was this very strange paradox for me because I was like, but I didn't get to. Like, I'm angry because I just did Predator. Like, not I, the actor, like Bella. I was like, Bella never got to be angry. And it was this beautiful parallel, I think, about the actual experience of survivors that are so often, like, it was an ironic and unintentional parallel that I sort of discovered in this moment, that where it was like so many survivors, you know, never express their anger because they're blamed, they're shamed, they're disbelieved, they're you know, told so many horrendous things in response to it. And so it actually, you know, I think that one of the powerful things that we learned through that ART run was like seeing a story like Bella's on stage was, you know, I was getting response from people on Instagram, from people after the show saying, this is the first time I ever saw my story on stage. This is the first time I ever felt seen. This is, you know, I've never told anyone until you. And you finally gave me the courage to tell my husband or my daughter or like you. I mean, it was just like, and this was after almost every show. I would speak with someone who's had this experience who felt in some way liberated or a level of catharsis through the show and through Bella. You know, within the first week of previews, I went to Diane and I was like, hey, I need training.
Yeah.
I need to talk, because I looked into it on my own to get the hotline training, but it was like the hours didn't work. So I was like, can we pull some strings? Like, I need to learn what to do fast. And Diane Paulus is such a champion of all actors and people. And she was so, everybody at ART was so willing to help me learn how to handle that. And so we did. And so I sort of got training. But the more all these things came up, the more people, our creative team was like, well, I think this story needs to be heard and needs to be explored more. And we should learn more about Bella beforehand. And we should learn what gets taken from her and what she grows from. And so that was sort of how the story really expanded because of the audience's reaction to it, which was just so, I'm so grateful for Bella's story to have gotten sort of a wider, you know, deeper experience.
I mean, it was extraordinary. I remember watching it, and there's, I guess this is a spoiler, but I don't know. I feel like I want to talk about it, but there's,
I know,
the
there's a bootleg online, so everybody listening to this podcast, I'm sure has seen it if they
have
seen
the show. There's
like,
the scene
on TikTok of all places, and I was like, oh no.
What?
And it was,
that's
like,
wild.
Preview 3, and I was like, guys, no.
Oh, that's crazy.
Bootleg. And if you're absolutely gonna bootleg, my god, wait until we open.
Wait.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my god. But I remember there's this scene, I'm pretty sure it's in Act 1, when Celia and Lauren's characters go to Bella's house, and you're like, your character is trying to find the words to express what happened. And I remember you could hear a pin drop in the audience, and I had full chills. And I remember thinking to myself, I kind of was taken out of it for a second, and I realized, I've never seen anything like this in a Broadway musical. Oh my god, I could like cry right now thinking about it. But it is, that is like the importance of theater and art, and especially art that's reflective of the times. Like, Jagged is like taking a mirror up to the Me Too movement, Time's Up, and being like, hey, this is what we look like in 2020 now. Like, this is America. This is how women are treated, how women are or aren't believed. And I think, like, it was just so extraordinary. I have to say, like, brava to you and literally Jagged Little Pill in general, because I was like, and I thought, wow, I wonder if anybody in the audience is having this same reaction that I'm having too. So
Well done.
Thank you so much.
And Bella, and that story is certainly in the right hands, because you are just such an incredible person, and like your empathy, I can only imagine it probably gets a little heavy at times too, with the way that
confirmed.
So all of like that, I mean, thinking about it, I'm like, wow, Jagged could be like one of the musicals that wins the Pulitzer. Like it's like, it reflects all of the people. Some people are like, oh, it's like a lot of issues crammed in, but that's never the way that I felt, because
watch
it felt
news.
Exactly.
That's a lot of issues crammed in.
Right. Watch any like it's like Grey's Anatomy or like any other show. Like you're gonna see every issue throughout. Like
I do think that people sort of our generation are more used to seeing so many issues in one storyline, and are also used to experiencing it, because we wake up, we look at our phone, we scroll through Instagram, and there you go. There's this terrible news, this thing, this selfie. There's just all these different, you know, terminology changes every 5 minutes. There's so, the rate at which we process and understand information, we grew up to that rate being so much faster than, you know, someone of a different generation who was given like the nightly news at 6.
Right.
And there was like a thing going on. And then you waited till the next day to get the nightly, you know? So I think it is, and it's definitely not been done in the musical before.
Oh, absolutely. What is like your favorite number in the show, other than your solo?
I think Forgiven.
Oh, so beautiful.
I think Forgiven is my favorite one. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Stanley is just one of the greatest, greatest performers I've ever seen. And she gives so much to it. And I love the parallels it shows between MJ and Bella. And I love that everyone sort of gets their thesis statement of the show in that moment. And to have the Ave Maria in there, I mean, Tom Kitt, Eugenius. It's just like, it's, and then the snow is fun.
Which was like another one of those moments where you're like, wow, this is so like simple, but it's gorgeous.
Diane Paulus is kind of like the person to go to for something where you're like, I didn't know I needed that. And then I did.
Does she have a Tony?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. If she doesn't for Hair, then she should for something else.
I believe she does for Hair, or maybe Pippin, or all of them.
Oh, absolutely for Pippin too. Oh my God.
I know. I'm like the president of the Diane Paulus fan club. Brilliant, brilliant mind.
Now, is it just terrible working with Derek Klena?
Oh, it's awful. I really.
Oh my God. This is the drama, honestly.
He's my best friend. He is like, I truly could not have done this experience without him.
And because your characters really are interlaced throughout the show.
And they didn't used to be, ironically, because in ART, I was Celia and Lauren's friend. Joe and Frankie's friend.
Yes.
And then honestly, like partially, I think what they saw was they were like, Catherine and Derek are like so dumb together. Like we would sit in the back of rehearsal. You can ask Brian Perry, our music director, how many times he had to yell at us.
Oh, he's
like,
so cute. Brian Perry
is, his ear too. I could be like very quietly singing a chorus part in the very back of the room. And he's like, Gallagher, you're flat. And I'm like, okay, I'm so sorry.
That's so funny. Yeah, I believe he's like Aaron Tveit's music director when they do content. Yeah. And Aaron Tveit is like my number one of all time. So I'm always like, you know, you're watching Aaron and all of a sudden you get distracted by the guy playing the piano behind
him. I know, that's a beautiful man.
Uh-huh.
But Derek and I, like, we were able to bring such a levity, and both of us have very, very intense and somewhat like pent up roles. Like neither one of our characters gets a release or a conclusion, or which is true to life. Like as I'm saying this, I want to make it clear that like this is something that I think is one of the most powerful things about the way that Diablo writes, is that she doesn't sensationalize and she doesn't tie things up in a bow. And the way she writes is true to life and is true to our experiences. And I think that one of the best things our show does is that Bella has, it's very clear that by the end of this, Bella still has a long way to go.
Absolutely.
Like this is the very beginning of a very long road for her, and a road to recovery. And so, but I think because of that, Derek and I were very conscious of like keeping our energies okay and like checking in on each other, but also like having snowball fights and like, you know, dancing to Clay Aiken and like doing really silly things. I just wouldn't have made it through it without him.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I remember seeing some of like the backstage, like Instagram stories, like when everything was still running at that point. And oh my God. So fun.
And we lived 10 blocks away from each other. So we'd take a cab home together or the subway home most nights. And we would just like always debrief and always like, he's just such a good shoulder to cry on and so understanding and so smart and kind and wonderful. I just love him. And his wife, Alicia, is like the coolest, best person.
I'd expect nothing less for him. Yeah, he's like the all-American boy.
So chic. She's so wonderful. She's so smart. The two of them are incredible.
You've had both of your Broadway outings so far, like the casts have been absolutely incredible. Awakening, like we interviewed Ali Stroker 2 weeks last week. The most sweet and sincere person, Krista Rodriguez, was our first ever episode of Drama.
My birthday twin.
Oh my God.
July 23rd.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. Wow.
She is one of my favorite people on this entire planet. I just love her.
I know that we just had Spring Awakening, but if there is ever a world where we get to see you as Ilsa one day, that would be...
I can't tell you how much of a dream that is for me.
Oh, I can see it.
And that was actually what Michael originally approached me to play in Spring Awakening. And then, Ben, he was looking for an Ilsa, and Ben was like, oh, you should look up my friend Catherine.
This is Ben Platt.
This is Ben Platt, yeah.
Okay.
And so then, Ben texted me, he was like, my friend Michael's going to call you. And I was like, okay. So Michael calls me, and then he was like, you're perfect. Are you available over the summer? I want you as my Ilsa. And I was like, incredible news. And we like had coffee. We talked about the whole thing. He was like, save your summer. And then he called me. Then there was like this very, very long-winded story that I've told many times, but it basically involved like me not ever hearing from him, then running into him at an ice cream shop. And then I basically panicked, and then eventually was like, well, what about that production of Spring Awakening? And he was like, why didn't you show up your audition? And I was like, didn't get that email.
Oh my God, drama.
Literally. And so then I went in like the next day, and then he called me and he was like, hey, I love you. I hope you'll still come see the show. We're going in a different direction. Like, you'll get it when you see it. We're going in a very, very, like, it's so polar opposite from you. But I love you. Like, I hope we can be friends, basically. So then I recorded my album, and the day I finished my album was the day before they started rehearsals. And the girl who played Voice of Marta dropped out, and he called me and he was like, I'm begging you. You play guitar and I need you for this. And I was like, and it took a while because I was kind of like, you know, I had a tour that I was maybe going to go on, like all these different things were maybes. And then I went back into the studio, and my producer and I watched the Tony performance from, I guess, 2008.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's my favorite show. How could I say no to this? Like, I just have to do it. I had to swallow my pride, take the smaller role. Like, and I was just thinking, I was like, this will be worth it, and it'll be something to do on the weekends. And I told him, I was like, these are the things coming up. Like, I don't know, whatever. And anyway, it just ended up working out.
And then you made your Broadway debut.
It was a big lesson for me in, you don't know anything. And if you swallow your pride, you're going to get a lot further than sticking to your, you know, ego. And honestly, like,
wow,
it's been that way ever since. Like, every single job I've had has grown from something smaller or morphed, or, you know, so I've fully had a lot of lessons and swallowing my pride and letting go of my ego and just trusting that whatever happens is going to be the right thing.
I'm living. That's great advice. Wait, we forgot to ask you a question that we usually ask right at the start of the episode.
Yeah.
As we're jumping away from Spring Awakening, which we love. Yeah. Catherine, are you well?
Oh my God, I think.
You certainly seem it.
You know, I'm it's been a very complicated year, and I very much needed some time to process a few things and finish writing a few songs. And I think that for me, I'm taking it one day at a time, and I'm waking up and I'm gardening and I'm doing like an online workout class and I'm playing with my dog and I'm writing songs and I'm calling my parents and I have like pen pals that I'm, you know, a pen pal. I don't know why I said multiple, but you know what I mean? Like, I have like, I'm looking at that letter, which is what reminded me of it. And, you know, so I have all these things that are sort of keeping me okay. I'm okay. You know that line in All Too Well where she's like, I might be okay, but I'm not fine at all.
Fine at all. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Oh my God. Taylor is a prophet, and there's a lyric for everything. Like, there's always something you can bring it to. I love to hear that. You know, it's certainly been a time of like creative renewal for a lot of people, and you probably wouldn't have been working on an EP while doing Jagged right now, you know? So it's like, there's so many things that come of it.
I mean, are you guys well?
Oh wow. I would say
a very check in on your friends. You know?
Thank you. Oh my god, you're so
rock.
I would say yes, it's a similar situation. Like I would say for me, like the best part has been that I've been able to mostly be quarantining with my family and then my boyfriend who lives in Ohio, and you know, I live in New York, and so there's that silver lining of we would not have been able to see each other very often this time of year, and he's in musical theater school, and so like it's been able to like I mentioned this before in an earlier episode, but like I needed everything to slow down, like you were kind of saying.
Yeah.
Like things were going very fast. I felt like I was losing control of a lot of things. And so this has been a really nice time to rein it in and also like watch lots of movies that I've wanted to watch.
Yes. 100%.
But all things aside, like this, the podcast has been flourishing during this time. And so it's been good. It's okay, but not fine at all. Yeah.
Honestly, Taylor forever.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Connor?
And I'm well too. Thank you for asking. You know, this is actually a reveal. I have not revealed this on the podcast, even though it's something that was happening, but I had foot surgery at the end of February because I like tore something in my foot. And for some reason I was like, I don't really want to talk about it that much, but I got surgery like literally a week before quarantine happened. So one of the positives of all of this has been my foot has fully healed. Like I was able to rest.
That's incredible.
And
right,
like
where you might have like pushed yourself
ice.
And like wow.
Yeah. So that's been great. And I've just really been like getting back into exercising and I'm spending time with family. I've never been more in touch with my friends.
Same.
You know? Like we have like a weekly call with certain friends. Like every other week we've been catching up with these girls from like it's just been for the existential dread that dawns on me like probably three times a day, I would still say this has been a time that has brought me like peace in other ways.
Yeah.
So it's been one of those bittersweet times in my life where I'm like resting and enjoying it, but also thinking like, am I going to have a career?
Oh,
you know, is my life.
Yeah. It's,
you
how
know?
Can you not? It's like no one has any answers for the world and we're young and we're already asking like, what's the rest of my life? I actually, you know what? I said this to my parents this morning. I was like, everything just feels like it's pushed now. And so it's like, how do I make this time useful? It's like a very long weekend where it's like, I should do things now that's going to make my week easier. But then the week is going to be further. It's like the week is getting further and further away. So you're like, I'm running out of things to do that are useful.
I know. It does feel like a really long weekend and that like the Sunday scaries sometimes dawn on me, you know? And I'm like, but no, I'm good. I'm doing well. I will say your new music really
oh, yes.
put me in a place.
A full-ass mood.
I listened to it all the way through, like, for the first time, and then I heard Dylan listening to it, and the first one's called Even My Dog, right?
I was
literally
like,
singing the chorus.
How do you know this already?
I had heard it one time, and Dylan was like, you know it already, and he was gagged, and I was like, I think it's just that catchy.
That is really cool.
It's that good.
But also, like, fully poetic and like you still get like a message across. Like it's like I said earlier, like it's in a similar vein of Taylor of like you're able to tell these stories and take us to a time and a place. I wonder how you talk about us now or whatever.
Yeah, how do you talk about us now? Yeah.
Like come on. Like that for any relationship you've ever had, like whether it's romantic or otherwise, like that's so real.
It's so funny. That was one of the songs that I wrote sort of like the second week we were here. And I just had, you know, when you're in a situation and so often in a relationship, you hear someone talk about their past relationships. And I think once you take a step out of it, you start to realize like, you know, obviously this album is a lot about trust and a lot about certain narratives shifting. And, you know, I think something that was really paining me was like, is there someone out there who's hearing that I'm, you know, all of these things.
Wow.
That's not true. And like, I'm so like, I'm a really bad liar. I'm really like, I'm just like, I have no chill. Like I have a very hard time upsetting people like to a detriment. I'm not saying like, oh my God, I'm an amazing person. I just mean like, I like hate the idea that someone's upset with me. Like,
of course,
crushing to me. And so I think that song for me came out of this place of like, but I have to tell everybody the truth. And it's like, no, you don't. That song to me was like, I just have to like accept mm-hmm. that I know what my experience was and it's the only thing I can control. But
right.
I can still wonder if, you know, the things that are being said about me and, you know, or not. I have no idea.
Right. And it's in being kind of like alone. Like, I mean, you said your brother's there and everything, but being alone with your thoughts can be so
crushing.
Scary.
It's crushing. It's absolutely crushing. I like fully, I think it was very interesting because for me, I began writing Friends to Entertain, which was the first song I started writing in September. And I went straight into rehearsals. And playing Bella Fox is a role you can't really play when you have anything else on your mind. And certainly not anything else weighing down your heart. My grandmother died at the end of August. I began writing these songs in September. You can imagine it wasn't a very great summer, nor lead into rehearsals. So I was really certain, I was carrying a lot of pain into this process. And I knew that I couldn't feel it. I knew I had to just like buck up and get through and like take it day by day. And I had an hour of therapy a week where I could talk about it. And then the rest of it, I had to just show up for the role, for the show, for the survivors that would be coming to see it and live through that catharsis. And so, you know, it wasn't really until January that I started writing songs again. And then slowly but surely, I had my daytimes free and I started, you know, writing things down and peering through journals and having sort of sessions here and there. And that was when like I sort of started unpacking the box. And then, and it was something that I felt when this started, when I sort of saw this coming a little bit the week before we shut down, was when I ordered the mic and I ordered like everything I needed, because I think there was something about having boxed everything up for so long that at the beginning of this, I was like, okay, what have we got? what can I unpack? What, you know, what pieces of songs can I dive into? And that was so important for me to sort of understand a lot of things that I hadn't had any time to process during the show. And so that was sort of where it all came from.
And it's, I mean, the finished product is amazing. And it's true that they were all one take.
Yep, recordings. Literally right where I am right now with this mic. And I was just like, most of them late at night, like.
Oh, I love that.
I had no idea what I was doing and I didn't think they were going to be any good. I was just like, whatever, at least I'll have like good recordings so I can remember them and I can bring them to someone who knows how to produce. Mm-hmm. And then I played them for my brother and a couple other friends and they were all like, but this is what you sound like. And it was really my friends that encouraged me to do it. They were like, this is you. These songs are you. This is like when you send us voice memos of your new songs, like this is what we love the most about you is this like, you know, raw sort of thing. And your produced things are great, but they're different. And so I got a lot of encouragement from my friends that were just like, why don't you just like these are personal songs, make it personal. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I fully had panic attacks all day.
Of course.
Yeah.
But like in sharing that personal stories, like once again, people are able to relate and just... Yeah. I'm sure the feedback's been amazing. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The feedback has been amazing. It's definitely, it's scary being that personal and especially about something that I was very quiet about, obviously. Like, you know, yeah, I definitely feel like this weird, like, oh, yeah, by the way, that was going on. You know what I mean? And so it's weird. It's like, you know, you look back on your, and I think this is a very human thing, but it's like I was looking back on like my Instagram and I was like, oh, you look so happy. But I know that you weren't. Like, it's just this weird, and I think all of us can relate to that, this what we put out there versus, like, you were crying 10 minutes before that photo was taken, or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So I think that's so much of what fuels all of us, is this just, like, whatever, or at least it certainly fuels me a lot, is, like, whatever pain there is, whatever insecurity is, like, I'm, like, pushing through it. So sometimes you need to, you know, take a step back and breathe.
Well, wow. I'm glad that you took the time to do that and also share it, because it's remarkable.
It reminds me of that Carrie Fisher quote that Meryl Streep said, take your broken heart, make it into art.
That I definitely had a broken heart. I'm glad it's art.
Wait, really quick, I have to ask you, that quarantine dance party that you did with Ben and Noah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Was that 100 years ago?
Yes, it was 7 years ago.
It might as well have been. Did you guys raise a lot of money? That was it was to raise money,
yes,
right?
The problem with what we did was there was no like donation thing on Instagram yet. So we actually have no idea how much money we raised. We just really encouraged people to donate. And so we know about like 4,000 to 5,000 people tuned in, which is like kind of crazy. If you think about it.
That's
like,
crazy.
Oh my God.
And like, it was just really fun because, so they came up here and when they came up here, it was like, before it got really like, you have to stay in your house and never leave. It was just like, hey, groups of 10 and 11. And then once they were here, everyone was like, you should be alone and stay. And we were just like, I mean, we are. We've only seen each other for like 10 days. Yeah. So it was great. But it was just very funny. The severity. It was when the severity of everything changed day by day.
Yes.
Just, and so I think like in that, as the anxieties were rising publicly, we were sitting at dinner one night and I was like, I think I just, we're talking about Grey's Anatomy maybe. Oh no, we're talking about Gilmore Girls. We're talking about Gilmore Girls, how they had a dance-a-thon for 24 hours to raise money. And I was like, what if we did that?
I remember that.
I remember that episode.
So that was how it started. And then the next day we like made a playlist and choreography the day after we did it.
So cute. I actually tuned in. I was one of those 4,000 or 5,000 people. I was still, you know, on the mend. So I wasn't dancing it out with you guys, like Meredith Christina vibes, Grey's Anatomy. Wait, what was that really good song that was at the end of, it was in Christina's last episode. It was the last song they danced it out to.
Where Does the Good Go, right?
Yeah, Tegan and Sarah.
Oh yeah, by Tegan and Sarah.
That's from OG Tegan and Sarah.
Oh, okay.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I love that.
I'm pretty sure I'm right about that.
Wait, are you a Grey's fan?
I'm a Grey's fan.
Still hanging on after all this time.
I watched the whole thing during start to finish. And I'm like OG, like have been watching since it premiered. But I rewatched the whole thing starting in September. And like all throughout rehearsals and everything. It was like the only thing that gave me peace of mind.
Wow. Yeah. And did you learn anything in the rewatch that you had forgotten about the show? Or like...
I think what was helpful was that I was like... I think like, I'll tell you what hit extra. The episode, the Day of the Dead episode.
Oh, yes. I remember
the rewatch. That hit extra hard because I was like, they just died 2 weeks ago. Like, it was so intense.
That's
and,
right.
And like, a lot of the parallels with Meredith's mom and, like, just all the different sort of, like, subtleties that they've... It really made me appreciate how much they've, like, woven in and how you can really track everything back. It's extraordinary. I love it. I'm like,
oh, my God. You say the word extraordinary. I remember the episode when Meredith... I think it's, like, the ferry boat accident. And she's, like... maybe drowned, and like her and her mom have that moment.
She says, you're like, you're ordinary.
You're anything but ordinary. Yeah. Oh my God.
And then Derek yells at her mom.
Oh yes. So good. It's a show.
Yes.
For those of us who have held on now to the bitter end or however much longer it's going to go, it's been rewarding over
the years.
Us
and Beanie Feldstein.
Okay.
She's who I talked to Grace about.
Oh my God.
And she was on randomly.
She was like, I have to tell you. I've been keeping this from you, and I had to wait until the perfect moment. I'm going to, and I literally sent her a picture back with like tears streaming down her face. I was like, I'm so proud of you.
And she had one of the most cracked guest starring appearances.
The character was wild.
Wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
That's so fun. Oh my God. Okay. We've been talking about a lot of different things, but we do want to kind of go back to your roots and talk about what we call the Ring of Keys moment, which is, you know, that moment of realization for a lifetime in the arts and knowing that it was going to be the path you were going to walk down. Do you have something that you can pinpoint to?
I kind of don't. And I think why is that I didn't know it was a choice. Like, I think because I grew up in it, I was kind of like, yeah, this is like some people become doctors and some people become actors. Like, it never felt out of reach or like bizarre. I was like, yeah, I don't know. This is, don't other people's dads put on makeup and go do plays at night? Like, no. Okay. So I think for me, it just never seemed like something. It was the only thing I liked doing, and it never seemed like something that was out of reach. But I will say that there was a moment when I think I was 12 years old and I went to see Spring Awakening. My mom took me to see it on Broadway. She said, and I remember like after it was at intermission, and this is like such a prophetic moment. I can't even believe it. But after hearing Dark I Know Well, I was like, I have to do, it was my favorite song. I listened to it so much and I was like, I have to do this in the revival. Like, I was like so cocky. I was like, I have to. And then I did, which was kind of crazy.
That's insane.
Cocky or prophetic, I don't know, whichever one it is.
No, you manifested it. You manifested it.
It's something happened. But
so you saw like the original Broadway cast, like Leah Michelle.
For the most part, it wasn't Leah Michelle. It was Kyle Riabko and Sosha. Oh, yes.
Okay, we saw them as well.
And yes. And then, and it's so funny because it was actually the first time I felt like I ever saw my voice on stage because I'd seen all these musicals, and every time I did a musical, like in, you know, my after school programs or whatever, I would always have to sort of adjust the way I sang and sing in a way that didn't feel as natural to me, which was fine and awesome. But this was the first time where I was like, oh, that's what I actually sound like.
And you do have this very unique voice. Like, it's beautiful. It's so cool. Has that just always been what's come out of your mouth?
Yeah, I didn't know it was unique until recently. I'm not okay. even like, it's so funny. I had this realization, like, I think I was reading comments on something and someone was like, or some catty message board or something, or someone was like, yeah, her voice is like too not suited for this or something. Like, it's got a very unique tone. And I was like, what are you talking about? I have a normal voice. And then I was like, maybe I don't.
It's cool. It's like folky. It's like, it's so cool. I think it's amazing. And it definitely suits Spring Awakening.
It definitely suits Spring Awakening. Duncan and I talked about that a lot because he definitely likes unique voices. I mean, Lauren Pritchard, like yes. all these, you know, and so.
Oh, what's her new stage name now? What do they call
Lo.
Her? Yes, Lolo.
I just love her so much. She's pregnant.
Iconic. Oh my God.
She is pregnant. I know. She's now public about it. So I can say
okay,
that,
okay.
She came before it's public and she's to Spring Awakening and she told me like in my dressing room and I just was like, couldn't stop. Like, hugging.
Oh, how cool.
It was so magical. She's like, she's my big sister. So. Oh, yeah, she's amazing.
That's so great.
Wait, really quickly, you were talking about your dad, who of course is the famous Peter Gallagher. I have actually known about him longer than I knew about you because I so oddly throughout like middle and high school watched every episode of Covert Affairs. Like I was like
I love that.
Like how rant, like I was an Annie Walker stan.
That is kind of a rant for a high schooler.
Oh my God. Well, I loved White Collar. And so like I would see the commercials for it or like maybe they came out on the same night or like something along those lines.
Yeah, something because it was all USA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Characters welcome. Yeah. So
it was like a hugely successful show. It just was very niche.
Yes.
So it's funny. It was like some people had never even heard of it. And then some people, it was like, yeah, my favorite show in the world. Mm-hmm. So it was a very funny, it was very, he was filming that like my whole high school. It's crazy.
Oh, how fun. Piper Perabo is unreal.
What a queen.
Yes, truly a queen. Yeah.
Totally legendary.
I will say, and I'm sure you're sick of talking about this because everyone probably does, I've never seen an episode of The OC.
Oh my gosh, it's wonderful.
Wonderful. I know I would love it. Should I watch that next?
I think you should. It's on Hulu, I believe.
Okay,
it's
I have
such
that.
Such a good show.
It's good.
It's like one of those shows that I know that if my dad wasn't in it, I'd be obsessed with it.
Wait,
now I have
respect okay.
and I love it and I've watched it, but I'm like not obsessed with it because that would be kind of weird. But if he wasn't in it, like if I had just seen it as a fan, it'd be like something I quoted on the daily. I think it's just so smart. I think it's so brilliant. It's funny. It's yeah. It's the first season is like one of the best first seasons of television. I think. I don't know.
What is his role? Do you like how like we're on a podcast in 2020 and like people in their mid 20s are talking about a TV show, like they're explaining the plot to each other from like 2004 or something?
Honestly, well, UFC and Grey's Anatomy, I just want to say, did come out in the same year.
Oh.
They were competing time slots, and I weirdly remember that.
Wow. So you really have been watching Grey since the beginning.
Oh, 100%.
I love that.
Watched the pilot when it aired.
Respect.
And so, so my dad played Sandy Cohen. So my dad was the dad of it's based on the Cohen family and they live in Newport Beach. And my dad is a public defender and he meets this kid, Ryan Atwood, and he takes him under his wing and brings him in with Seth Cohen. And Ryan Atwood is played by Ben McKenzie, who just did Grand Horizons with Ashley Park, who was across the street from Jagged Little Pill. So Ashley and I got walkie-talkies and I sent them a cake. There's a famous line in the OC that says, where Ben's character goes, Luke goes, welcome to who's Chris Cormack, who's just on Nashville and is now on Grey's.
And now on Grey's. Yeah, it's all combined.
Okay. And so Luke goes to Ben and he goes, or Chris goes to Ben, Luke goes to Ryan. Oh my God, yikes. Welcome to the OC, bitch. And so I sent a cake over to Grand Horizons that said, welcome to 44th Street, bitch. Which I think was one of my finest moments.
I love that.
That is an incredible moment of pop culture.
Everything just emerging. Yeah. Wasn't Ben McKenzie on Gotham? Was that how? Yeah. Okay, that's how I know. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's been crushed.
Okay, I'm gonna watch The OC. I know there's an iconic death scene where like some. It was like controversial at the time, right? Yeah.
Anyway. I want to be.
I've seen the scene Yeah. Oh my God. Insane.
All right. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, Catherine, but
talk so much.
No, this has been so much fun. But we do end every episode with what we call the dose of drama, which Connor, do you want to explain what that is?
Yeah. So we just kind of like to wrap up on a dramatic note. It could be, you know, drama we're consuming, drama in our hearts, something that's on our mind, you know, in this time of quarantine, or maybe just in this time of life. I could always kick it off.
Yeah, please do.
Here's my dose of drama. So one of my TV shows that I recently watched was Normal People on Hulu.
Will Pomus.
Oh, my God.
Will he please?
That's my, well, my drama is this.
That's like, that's
oh, my God. Right.
It's like, which one?
Well, you're a bi-con,
honestly,
Catherine.
I don't know if I'm a bi-con, but.
Like, honestly, watching that show, everyone wants to fuck one of them. So, like, it is definitely.
It's like, I don't know. It's all beautiful.
did you watch it?
I ate it at the
show?
I'm sitting. And I read the book. I read during the depths of my despair.
Oh, my God. What a summer.
I read it. I'm like, let me tell you.
A cruel summer.
Goodbye, cruel summer. Hello, daylight.
There it is.
I'm sobbing. But my drama is that, honestly, Paul Mescal, he plays Connell, and I was literally every 5 seconds just swooning at how, like, compassionate and wonderful he was and sexy. And I was thinking to myself, okay, my new life stream, move to Dublin, find a good, strapping Irish man. And then I realized, will I ever be able to travel internationally again?
That's crushing.
Don't say such a thing.
And I was crushed. I'll be positive and say that I will, but watching that show was just heartbreaking for many reasons, and that was one of them, because I was like, this man won't love me, will he? Although, okay, wait, we'll talk about the ending of it later, because, like, maybe there is hope for me in the end. You never know, but...
It was big. It reminded me of Once, like, the musical, like, big Once vibes at the end there, yeah.
I love Once.
Me too.
Steve Kazee.
Oh, my God.
You would be great in Once.
I would love to be in Once. My God. Well, Steve and I at his show sing Falling Slowly together, and it's like, what? He's my favorite person to sing with. So if he'd do it with me again, I'd do that in a heartbeat. Except he never would. He'd be like, nope.
Oh my God, stop. No.
He's dead now.
Oh, yes, he is.
Yes.
Oh my God. His little baby boy, Callum. I love him so much.
Oh, with Ms. Jenna Dewan Kazee.
They are such an incredible couple. I FaceTimed with them the other day. They've been such a source of support and love and light, and I cannot wait to spoil that little child.
Oh my God. I don't think I've seen any pictures yet, but I need to look up.
Both of them have posted like just the cutest photos. I can't even, I'm so obsessed with this little baby. I just love him so much.
Aw, Aunt Catherine.
Truly. I know. Every time we're on FaceTime, I'm like, okay, you two out of the picture. Are you excited to meet your Aunt Kathy?
Aunt Kathy. I feel like everybody has an Aunt Kathy.
That's my nickname. My best friend's family nicknamed me Aunt Kathy because I just show up and I like always have pastries and I'm just, obviously, like, you know, I enter their house and especially after parties, I'm the first one there. I start cleaning up, putting out pastries, like asking if people need coffee, and it's just like Aunt Kathy's here. I'm the first one to go to bed too.
I love that. I'm gonna go ahead with my dose of drama, unless you're ready, Aunt Kathy.
Oh, I'm not.
Okay. So I will say mine is in catching up with all these friends, they will often ask what I have going on, and one of the only things that I have is this podcast, you know. And they clearly don't listen. Some of them clearly do not listen, which is fine. Like, it might not be for everyone. But then I'll ask them what they're doing in quarantine to stay busy, and they're like, listening to tons of podcasts. And I'll just But here's the thing. You can't always get what you give. And I can't expect that same level. It's like people are saying, like, the people who aren't reaching out, like, cut them out of your life. It's like, no, like, everyone's dealing with this in their own way. Everyone has their own ways of staying sane. If they like drama podcasts, they do. If they don't, whatever. I'm not going to dislike them any less, you know?
I always think about it like, there's always going to be people who are going to, you know, volunteer and listen to it and like, be outwardly supportive and whatever. And that's wonderful. And there's going to be people that like it slipped their mind and they forgot about it and whatever.
Right.
And that's neither one of those are any sign of love or, you know, the depths of someone's love. But I always do think about it. It's like, if something's really important to you and you bring it up to your friend and then it's ignored when it's coming from a place of like expression of like, hey, it'd be really important to me if you listen to this. Like, would you mind? Do you have the time? And then there's like a rush off or whatever. Then it's like, then I think that's a different thing. But it's also like, you know, everybody has their own experiences. Everyone's doing their own thing. But it's like, that's always been a thing I think of, is like, if I express this as something that's really important to me, and then if it's like ignored or brushed off, or if they're like, yes, and then like, what, it's like, it's always like good to sort of like suss out what makes me feel good. Is this making me feel valued or not? I don't know.
That actually really speaks to me.
Right?
I'm gonna take that advice. Sense.
Yeah.
I love that.
If it's really important to you to have them listen, tell them.
Some of them. Other ones is like, I don't care, you know. Right. Fine. Catherine, do you have a dose of drama in this time of quarantine?
I don't even think I do. I mean, I just released my drama.
You did. It's called Demos, Volume 1. It's
available. My quarantine drama is going to be released on Volume 2. Like, oh God, what do I got to try to be smart with what I say. You know, I think that my only dose of drama, you know, I don't have any.
That's okay. I respect. You're good. You've given us so much today, and so we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You are so wonderful.
You know what my dose of drama is? People not wearing fucking masks.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. I know.
That is the drama. It's like, how can you just ignore this?
It's just absolutely, that's my one thing. I'm like, okay. That's my drama.
Wear a mask. And we're in Ohio, and things are opening up now. And it's like everyone has just like, it's like nothing's changed.
Relax.
Wear a mask.
Going out without your mask.
Oh my God.
And posting about it on Instagram.
That's literally, it's like,
that's my drama.
Yeah. Okay. That's great.
Scrunchie dropped. are people going to see the video of this too?
No.
Okay, great.
But
then they won't.
Yeah.
So there we go. Drop the scrunchie.
There was an epic scrunchie drop.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. This was so much fun. Thank you for all the stories that you shared, and for continuing to put out your content and your music, and just being such a great role model in the community. And just
thank you.
Honestly, just we all should be looking to you in these times.
Oh my gosh, that's very kind. I don't know if I can offer anything up other than sad songs and some hand sewn masks.
We'll take it.
But thank you guys. This was such a treat for me. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Aww, and everyone can follow you on Instagram at Catherine Gallagher, right?
Is it the full name? Yes, right.
But Twitter, it's just
Catherine G.
Catherine G. And it is a Y Catherine in Catherine.
One letter too long. Who knew?
Wow.
I know.
And then everyone can of course follow the drama at The Drama Podcast. Follow me at Dylan McDowell.
And me at Connor McDowell.
And Connor, we will see you next time.
Drama.